It is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send it on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you this week. Let's get started. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I am so ready.
You are so ready. Let me introduce you. Adam Cenk is one of the most recognized openly gay stand-up comics in the country, having been featured on season 6 of NBC's Last Comic Standing. He's been on True TV's Smoking Gun Presents World's Dumbest Criminals, VH1's Best Week Ever, and the Here TV program's Hot Gay Comics and Busted, along with numerous radio appearances on Sirius XM Out Q. He's hosted Adam Cenk's Gay Bash, a monthly showcased at Caroline's on Broadway, and for 3 years he was the host and producer of the wildly successful Electroshock Therapy Comedy Hour at New York's Therapy Lounge, one of my favorite places in the city. More recently, he hosted That Cenk Show and the Great New York Mike Off in one of those other non-Manhattan boroughs. He's performed all over this country, and now he's here on our show. Adam Cenk, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Wow, that is a beautifully written introduction. Who wrote that?
I came up with it all by myself. I did Control X, and then I did Control V, and I did that myself.
Well, it is genius.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But you did all of those things.
I really did them. It's hard to believe.
Is it hard to believe?
Well, it's hard to believe that it's been 9 years since I started. It feels like, you know, sort of just yesterday I was doing my first stand-up set at Gotham Comedy Club. And 9 years went by very quickly, as they tend to do the older you get, I guess.
Well, let's back up a step. Let's back up a step, because we start with you as we start with all of our funny people that we have on the show. The same question, where do you, Adam Cenk, find the funny?
First, I should ask you, are we allowed to curse on this show? Or
not so much, Adam. It's a family gay show.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. I just want to make sure. In that case, I'll have to put this delicately. I have a good friend who's another comedian. Her name's Robin Fox. And she once said to me, if you're ever faced with a situation in your life that makes you go, what the F?
Right.
That's a good indication that there's comedy there. So anytime it happens to you, whether you are walking down the street and you see something, or you're watching television, or someone says something to you at a party, and your immediate reaction is, what the F? You should write that down immediately, whatever happened, because somewhere in there is a phenomenal joke that an audience is going to love.
Do you have a lot of those moments?
Some people seem to think I have more than my fair share. I feel like everyone has those moments, but I definitely have trained myself to look for them and to remember them. So people are always saying to me, crazy stuff happens to you that doesn't happen to me. And I feel like, yes, it does. You're just not paying attention.
There you go. You're writing it down.
I'm writing it down, and I'm immediately like, for me, writing a joke is always about solving a puzzle. The thing that happens is the answer. Like, that's the solution. And then it's like, how do I build the puzzle to get to that solution?
Nice. So you said your first gig, your first time on stage, was at Gotham Comedy Club?
Yeah. I had done musical theater my whole childhood and all through high school and college. And then after college, I just kind of stopped performing. I felt like it was not something you were supposed to do as an adult. You know, like my inner voice, my inner heart said, go be a performer, go, you know, be an actor, be something. But my mother's voice in my head said, that's not acceptable. You know, if you're an adult, you have to do something serious and make money and give up your foolish dreams. So I, for 10 years, didn't do any performing at all after college. And I basically started to lose my mind. I started to, I was a TV news producer for most of those years, and much like Holly Hunter's character in Broadcast News, I just found myself bursting into tears all the time.
Sorry, you know? I'm pausing on that visual. Okay, we're good.
I'm often compared to her, especially, you know, the little dresses she wears in that. I have some of them, but I used to just cry all the time. I was miserable, and I was finally producing news. My last TV news gig with a Channel 7 here in New York, the ABC affiliate, WABC.
Yeah.
And Bill Ritter, who was the anchor of the 11 o'clock news, which is the show I produced, and who is a lovely man, said to me one day, you know, you're a great producer, but you're the most miserable person I've ever
met.
And he said, whatever it is you want to do with your life, you need to go do it, because buildings fall down, and this could all be over in a minute. And if it ends for you, are you really doing what makes you happy? And I said, nope, I'm not, and I quit. And I didn't really have much of a plan. I started waiting tables. I knew I was going to do some kind of performance. I'd been thinking about stand-up on and off for years in my head. I would be at the gym and stuff, and I would find myself writing material for a show that didn't exist.
Okay. Did it have a title?
It had various titles.
Okay.
But I didn't know what it was for. Like, I would just be on the treadmill or something, and I would think about a story, and then I'd go, well, you know what would make that story funnier is if I told it this way, and if I added that to it, and if this is how it ended. And then I would stop myself and be like, what am I doing this for?
Right.
It was just this crazy conversation I was having with myself. And finally, I decided I should try actually saying some of this out loud on a stage. And one thing that New York has in its comedy scene is if you're a beginner, you do what's called a bringer show.
Yeah.
Where you can get up at any comedy club in the city. You can get up at Caroline's, Gotham, Broadway Comedy Club, any of the major clubs, you know, on a weeknight, like on a Wednesday night or a Tuesday night. And you get like 7 minutes of stage time. And in return, you have to bring 10 audience members. So essentially, you're paying the club for your spot. You're bringing them 10 people who are going to pay cover and buy 2-drink minimum. And in return, you get to, you know, try being a comedian.
Yeah.
So I got up on stage at Gotham in 2003, in September of 2003, and I was just immediately hooked from the get-go. It was such a rush. I remember my legs were shaking, not from nervousness, but just from exhilaration. And it went fairly well, considering it was my first time doing it, although it's hard to judge when you do a bringer show because you do have your friends and family there kind of rooting for you.
Right.
But there were people that didn't know me that laughed, and I thought, I think this is something I can kind of do. And it puts me back on stage where I want to be, but, you know, I don't have to audition. I don't have to pretend that I'm an actor because I'm really not a very good actor.
Okay.
And I get to write all my own stuff. So I get to use all the training I had and all the years I worked as a writer and a producer for my own show. And I don't know, it all kind of came together for me, and I started doing it, and I've been doing it ever since.
How gay was your material on that first night?
You know, I was always out on stage. You know, I never pretended that I was anything but who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I think about it, it wasn't really all that gay. Like, I did a lot of stuff about my parents.
Yeah.
And I was still pretty young at the time. I mean, I was 33. So, like, I was still telling my coming out story.
Right.
Which, at that point, that was only 10 years before that I had come out to them. So it was kind of still like a fresh nightmare. And so I did that story, but otherwise I kind of just did pop culture observations, which is funny because I don't really do much of that anymore.
I bombed there the first time I did it.
Oh, did you try?
I brought 9 people. I did not bring 10 at Gotham Comedy Club. That was my first time on stage. And my legs were, I mean, you said yours were shaking. I almost fell the hell down. Turns out, way too many shots beforehand for courage. It did not work out well for me at all. So I'm happy this worked for you.
Yeah, my rule with alcohol and comedy is like 2 drinks is enough and 3 drinks is too much.
Yes, so 4 was bad. Anyway, well, that's okay.
What year was that, Ken?
That was in 1999. Okay. I was, what was I? I was 22.
Oh, wow, you were a baby.
I was a baby. I got up there, and I just talked about these crazy dates that I was on and my mom, and then I just feel like it came out sounding like I was going on dates with my mom. It wasn't good.
Oh, dear. was the audience disturbed?
Yes, particularly my mom.
She was there.
Yeah, that was also a mistake. Anyway, so yeah, my content was, I feel like I masked all the pronouns, so I was curious how out you were on your first time out.
You know, I had been out basically since college, even when I worked at Fox News Channel for 6 years, you know.
Yeah.
I was very much like, I'm gay, and if you don't like it, you know, tough, whatever.
Right.
So it would have been weird to me to go back into the closet for stand-up, because if I was going to be out at Fox News, I was certainly going to be out in a comedy club.
Yes. Now, yeah. What are some of the most fun places you have played? First, do you prefer, this is one of my favorite questions to ask, do you prefer a gay audience or a straight audience?
It's a hard question, because a few years ago I would have told you definitely straight. You know, straight people, I find, without wanting to insult any of your straight listeners, they're easily entertained.
Gotcha.
They have, and this is speaking in generalities, obviously, but straight people tend to have a lower bar for what they find funny. And I feel like gay people, because of our position in the world, because of the experiences we've had being outsiders and being on the fringes and being a true minority, I feel like we have such a highly developed sense of the absurd and the ironic that it takes a lot to make us laugh. Like, you can't just go for the obvious joke with a gay crowd. You have to really go for, like, the unexpected and do a twist and kind of turn it around on them. And or you can be filthy, filthy dirty.
Nice.
And the gays do like that, particularly the gay men.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like lesbians prefer smart material, and gay men prefer dirty material, but it has to be, for both types of gays, it has to be at a certain level of sophistication to fly. A straight crowd, I can get up and talk about coming out to my parents, or it's different. It's a different kind of set. When I perform for a straight crowd, I think I've become a little bit of a minstrel. You know, I try not to be, because I hate those kind of, that kind of comedy. Like, look at me, I'm
look
so
at me.
Gay. I don't want to do that. And I don't take it to that level, but there's definitely a lot of material about being gay in a straight world.
Yeah.
Versus when I do a gay crowd, I'm just telling stories.
Right.
Period. I'm not trying to make them understand anything, because they already get it. They get where I'm coming from. They get my life. So I can basically get up and just tell a story about a horrible date that I went on. And they will laugh because they can relate to that experience.
Oh, yeah.
Of being a gay man going on a horrible date with another gay man.
Now, you mentioned your family. What was it like coming out to your family as a stand-up comic?
I always say it was harder than coming out as gay. I mean, I had a real career. I had my master's in journalism, and I was, you know, producing live TV. I was producing my own show when I was 27 years old and making more money than any of my friends. I was the first person among my friends to buy my own apartment. So I was like everything my mom wanted, you know, as far as like being successful and being independent. And you know, you want your kids to make money and to take care of, be able to support themselves. And I was doing all that. And then all of a sudden at the age of 33, you know, I'm waiting tables. And I'm, like, going to amateur stand-up comedy nights and, like, reverting into this sort of existence of a college student. And she was not happy about that. She really thought I had lost my mind. And, you know, I think in the beginning they also didn't really think I could do it.
Yeah.
I think the first time they really saw me perform and saw that everyone was laughing and that they were laughing, too, they were kind of like, all right, maybe he can do this.
How was it having your family in the audience that first time?
You know, I've always enjoyed having them there. A lot of, I tend to, when they're in the audience, I tend to do material about them because they love it.
Right.
And it excites the audience when you say, like, and there's my mom, everyone. You know, like, then they all look at her. And you would think my mom would be the kind of person who would hate that attention, but she secretly loves it. And as long as I don't cross the line and really get nasty, in what I say about them, they really enjoy it. And I don't get nasty because I genuinely love my parents and my sisters, and they've been very supportive over the years. So I tweak them and I tease them and I poke at them a little bit, but I really don't. I know where the line is, and I know what would make them happy as opposed to what would upset them.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing to know that line.
I don't think my mom likes it when I talk about, like, my gay sex life.
No?
Yeah, she'd just rather not picture that, you know.
It's probably a wise way to go. It's a wise way to go. It's that whole Reform Judaism thing. They like hearing about that on stage.
That's exactly right. Now, you're a fellow Hebe.
I am indeed.
A little boy from New Jersey.
I am a New Jersey conservative, though. Conservative.
Oh.
I know. It's a
well,
whole...
you know the difference between Reform and conservative?
Tell me.
About 2 hours. You guys have long services, and also your music is the worst. Dreariest. All conservative synagogue music is like a dirge. It's like, me,
it always makes me feel like I'm atoning. It doesn't, it's not reserved for one day a year.
Our stuff is like, we like top 40. We like pop music.
That would not fly.
We have our cantor had a guitar.
Oh, no. There are no instruments there in Temple Emmanuel in Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. Absolutely not.
Honey, we had an organ. We thought we were like, we thought we were in church.
And we should say, was it not a highlight of you, for you to be featured in the 8 Gays of Hanukkah?
That was very exciting. Time Out New York magazine, for some reason, decided to feature 8 gay naked comedians for Hanukkah. As the 8 gays of Hanukkah. The only problem with that is you don't celebrate days in Hanukkah, you celebrate nights, but okay. I was a little out of shape for my photo shoot, and so I was less than pleased with the back fat, particularly on the one photo where you can see my butt.
How crazy did you work out prior to that, though?
I didn't, because I found out about it like the week before.
Oh, okay.
But what's funny is when I was posing for that, there was a female photographer, which made me more comfortable, actually, being naked, because, I don't know, there was just no sexual tension at all.
Nice.
And she was lovely and very professional, and she kept showing me the pictures, you know, digital pictures through her camera lens so I could see what they looked like. And I was like, oh, these look great. You know, I was totally happy with them. Then when they blew them up and put them in the on the website, I was like, oh, my God, what am I thinking? I look terrible.
Well, this show is so gay is working our way through the 8 Gays of Hanukkah. You're number 3.
Oh, who else have you talked to?
Well, Paul Case has been on the show a few times.
Paul is one of my best friends.
He's a great guy. And Sean Hollenbach.
Adore him. I love them both.
Adore him. Used
the
to listen.
Those people I despise, but I love
those couple. Yes. So we have the 3 that we like, and then the rest we could do without.
The rest are pigs.
Well, that's. I have to tell you, one of my favorite, perhaps unintentional, Adam Sank moments of this week was I was watching some videos on your website, and you didn't do this. This isn't your fault. But you're telling your coming out story, and you're talking about the fraternity and being in a library bathroom, and it was I was laughing, and then my assumption is you have no control over the ads that run across the bottom of the screen.
No, I don't. They're automated.
So you're telling this story about the college bathroom, and across the bottom of the screen it says, "Ready for college? Apply here." And I'm just thinking, that's just awesome.
Oh my gosh, hilarious.
You're preparing people.
I love that.
And as a college official, I feel that you are doing a public service to increase admissions at various colleges all across the country.
Well, especially at the University of Michigan.
Oh, yes.
But I love those content-driven ads. You know, on my blog, when I was living in San Diego, I broke a tendon in one of my fingers and had to wear this splint for like 6 months. It was the longest injury I've ever had. And I blogged about it constantly. And every ad on my blog for 6 months was like, you know, finger splint, tendonitis, hospital surplus. People are going to come here looking for, you know, the latest splinting technology, and they're going to be horrified by what they read on my blog.
You should try to mess with that a little. That would be fun to see what kind of ads you can get going.
Oh, totally. Well, and what's funny is if I rant about the Republican Party and how evil they are, like, I get, like, you know, Santorum for president.
Yes.
Like, across, I'll get that ad, and I'm like, I'm so glad the Santorum campaign is paying to advertise on my blog.
It's really paying off for them. They have cited that on Meet the Press as one of their surges.
Yes.
You're doing a service. You're doing a service all over the place. And we should say, not only are we both gay Jews, we're both Pisces.
Yes, your birthday is today. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. And your birthday is this week.
Yes, Thursday, February 23rd, I will no longer be 40, I will be in my 40s.
How does that make you feel?
Well, I'm not happy about it.
Okay, let's work through it. We can work through it.
But as people have said to me, the alternative is worse.
The alternative being dead?
Being dead.
Okay, yes, that is worse. Just checking.
I don't buy that. I feel like there should be an alternative where I go back to being 39. You know, like I tried 40 and it wasn't that fun for me, and I'm done. I'm going to go back to the 30s.
We've often talked about on this show the difference between California gays and New York gays. And it strikes me that having lived on both coasts, you could do a little bit of a comparison. Not to say that there aren't gays all over the world.
The bit I do about Southern California is that people out there are much friendlier. And by friendly, I mean stupid. They're really, really stupid. They are the loveliest people. They're nice and warm, and they will talk your ear off the moment you meet them, but they're not bright.
They're not bright. Okay.
There's a lot of chatter. Like when your waiter takes your order, he suddenly, you know, wants to be your best friend and tell you about how his day went. And you're like, I just want my soup. And in New York, that would never happen. In New York, you know, we're accused of being rude and abrupt, but really, we just want to get on with it. Like, we've got other things to do, you know, so we don't have time to make chit-chat. And the other thing about living in Southern California is that they have tanning salons.
They do.
And people go to them.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're wondering just how stupid they are, they have tanning salons in a climate where 75 degrees and sunny, you know, 90% of the year.
I would like to take this opportunity to pause and remind our listeners in Southern California that the views expressed by tonight's guest are not necessarily representative of those of us in the rest of the show.
Oh, come on, you agree with me.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm just a New York gay Jew. I know nothing.
I have tons of friends out there. I've met wonderful people out there. I just don't discuss, you know, politics or literature with them. I save that for my New York friends. But if you want to talk about, you know, the weather or what music we listened to last night or where we're going to have dinner tonight, then people from Southern California are perfect conversation.
They do the trick. They do the trick. Well, speaking of music, we do need to talk about your musical selections for this week's show. This is the part of the show, Adam, where you tell our listening audience. Now, you submitted a ton of songs, so I'm only going to pick a couple of them, and a couple of these are my absolute favorite songs that, and I have not played. The three that I've chosen, I have never played on the show in 4 years of the show. So it's very exciting for everyone involved.
This is exciting.
This is the part of the show, Adam, where you tell our listening audience what some of your musical selections say about Adam Sank. It's a little self-analysis for our listening audience.
Wow, which one should we start with?
We are going to start with, I am so excited that you picked this. We are going to start with, what does the Dream Academy's Life in a Northern Town say about Adam Sank?
You have to know this is my theme song.
Is it?
For so many reasons. I grew up in a northern town. If New Jersey can be considered northern, I consider it northern.
Sure.
Although some would say mid-Atlantic. This song was huge when I was in, I want to say, eighth grade.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, I always just found it beautiful and melancholy and kind of unusual. It doesn't sound like any other song. And before I started doing comedy, I would go every Friday night to a wonderful piano bar that doesn't exist anymore called Rose's Turn.
I have to tell you, that's where I got my start as a singing waiter, two doors down at the Oaks.
Shut up.
I swear to you.
That place is so special to me, and I would go every Friday night when Michael Isaacs would be at the piano.
Oh, of course.
And he would call me up, as he would call up, it wasn't that I was special, he would call up anyone who wanted to sing. And he would call me up, and I would sing Life in a Northern Town, which happens to be in my very limited vocal range. I have about a one-octave range, and Life in a Northern Town fits perfectly. And I would sing it every Friday night, and the entire place would sing along with me on that. Hey, they would all sing that part with me. And slowly, as time went on, I would start to sneak in little jokes until it got to a point where, after the second verse, Michael would just kind of vamp on the piano for a while.
Nice.
And I would do a whole set of jokes. I would do like 10 minutes of comedy, and Michael's so brilliant that he would add sound effects with the piano. Like if I talked about someone getting shot, he would slam the piano case shut. Or, you know, if I talked about something gay, he would tinkle on the high keys like. And that was really how I learned to do stand up, and that was where I got my confidence. And to this day, I will occasionally stop by the Duplex.
Yes.
Where Michael now performs on Friday night, and I'll sing Life in a Northern Town, and I'll work out some new material there.
See, I got fired from the Duplex, and past guests know not to say that word on the show. But we'll move on. We'll move on to another.
Fired? Were you having sex in the bathroom? Or
that's really not the point of the story, Adam. We're going to move on to another song now.
Because I have.
I am sure
you know
I...
You already know from my coming out story, I'm a big fan of bathroom sex.
Family show, family show.
Can we say that on terrestrial radio?
We can try, and then I'll get the angry emails from the station out in eastern Tennessee saying, we would like to remind you that this is a family station. So, but that's good. We need that reminder every now and then.
Aren't we not even allowed to say gay in eastern Tennessee?
We have code words. We bleep it out. And then I have to tell you another one of my favorite songs, and we're saving the best for last, but The Cranberries' Dreams. What does The Cranberries' Dreams say about Adam Sank?
That song came out the year I graduated college and moved to Atlanta. And I would drive myself to work at my horrible job working at Macy's as a sales manager, my first job out of college. And that song was always on the radio, and it would always put me in a dreamy mood. It would take me out of sort of the doldrums that was my life at that point. And it was just lovely and ethereal and special, and it kind of gave me hope that I could maybe chase my dream someday instead of working on the sales floor at Macy's Perimeter Mall in Atlanta.
Love that one.
That song.
Love that one. And then this is my song. This is the song that my brother and my sisters quoted in my full page yearbook ad.
Oh boy.
The Indigo Girls Closer to Fine. What does the Indigo Girls Closer to Fine say about Adam Sank?
Well, really, I could have picked any song by the Indigo Girls. I mean, they can do no wrong. They are such beautiful people in every way. You know, they're just their musicality and their voices and their integrity, their honesty, everything they do just thrills me. And that song came out when I was still in high school. And I just graduating high school and going off to college and just listening to that album every day I would fall asleep listening to that album. And Closer to Fine, to me, is one of the most inspirational songs ever written.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes you want to get your crap together and shake out all the cobwebs and, you know, quit doing drugs and stop doing whatever it is you're doing that's hurting you and just be healthy and be smart and take care of yourself. That's what that song means to me.
And funny, Adam Sank, the best thing you ever did for me is to help me take my life less seriously.
Exactly. It's only life after all.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yay. I have to say, Amy Ray on This Show Is So Gay a few years ago, I they're still cleaning the drool off the soundboard.
I'm so jealous you get to meet her. I've never met them, but I've been fans for, God, 25 years now.
Oh, yeah. I'm there with you. So what are you working on these days?
I've been doing this naked comedy show lately.
Tell us.
This started because there's a group called the Gay Naturists International. They call themselves naturists, which is another word for nudist.
Okay.
And they're truly an international organization. They have chapters all over the world. And once a year, they have a big retreat in the Poconos Mountains of Pennsylvania in August, and they book performers. So 2 years ago, I got a call from them that they wanted me to come and do comedy, and they said, you don't have to be naked, but if you could show some nudity, our members would be greatly appreciative, no pun intended.
Okay.
So I kind of, and I didn't really want to perform naked, but I also didn't want to disappoint them. I'm very much a people pleaser. So I kind of devised this striptease routine where
oh boy.
I came out on stage fully clothed, and then every time I got a good laugh from anything I said, I would remove an article of clothing.
It's motivating.
Very motivating, and it motivated them to laugh a lot.
Yes.
At the end of the show, I was wearing nothing but a sock.
Oh, wow.
One strategically placed sock. If you've ever seen the Red Hot Chili Peppers, it was that sort of idea.
Okay.
And then as I was running off the stage, I pulled the sock off and waved goodbye and dipped behind a curtain. So there was just that flash of schwanz, if I may.
You may.
And they loved that, and they were very excited. And so the following year, they had me back. And this time, they wanted me to do a longer set. They wanted to give me my own night because that first time I was combined with other performers. And I thought, wow, how am I going to top myself? I can't do the striptease again. I got to really take it a step further. So this time I came out in tearaway pants and a tearaway shirt, and I kind of gave a little speech about how I wasn't going to do a striptease this year because it was too distracting for me. And they kind of went, oh. And I just went, I went, yeah, this year I'm just going to go whole hog, and I just went and ripped off everything. And then did the rest of that hour-long set completely buck naked.
Wow.
Which was surprisingly easy.
Was it? I don't think I would have been able to pull that off. No pun intended.
You know, I thought it was going to be awful. And honestly, after the first minute, I just forgot I was naked. And they're all naked, of course. I mean, the whole audience is naked. So in a way, you feel weird that when you're at this retreat, if you're wearing any clothes,
right,
they kind of shun you. Like, I would go to meals, and I would wrap a towel around my waist just because, you know, I want to really eat breakfast with my wing-wang hanging out. And they would say, what's with the towel? You know, they'd be sort of chastising. And I'd be like, I'm just a hired help. I'm not a naturist. Although I will say they are lovely, friendly people. I don't want to make them sound like they're
right
unkind.
I love, though, how in this week in therapy, I'm going to need to weigh out the balance of the scales between never wanting to be naked on stage, but I also never want to be shunned. And I don't know where those scales come out.
Well, that's just it. Like, are you what's more important, your modesty or your need to please other people?
It's really, I'm going to have to work this out this week, and I'm going to get back to everybody next week.
Well, So I did that, and then my good friend Daniel Nardiccio, whose name you may know.
Of course.
The crazy party promoter / bon vivant here in New York, said to me, well, why can't we do our own naked comedy show here in New York? And I said, we certainly can. And he sent an email out to his, you know, 5,000-person list saying naked comedy hosted by Adam Sank, and we got a few other comics who were willing to get naked, which, by the way, is harder than you may think.
I would think it's pretty hard.
Very difficult to find gay comics, believe it or not, who are willing to perform naked, even for a gay crowd.
Huh.
In fact, I asked Sean Hollenbach and Paul Case, and I believe the direct quote was, hell no. But we ended up selling out. We've done it twice so far. Both times it has been literally standing room only.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the show's called Dirty Laundry, and the idea is we're naked and we're also airing all of our dirty laundry. We are telling the most dirty, filthy, embarrassing personal stories about ourselves that we can. And when you asked me earlier whether I prefer performing for gay or straight audiences, the answer is gay audiences if I can be this honest. If I can really
put it out there,
to what's real and put it out there, and not so much the nudity. Again,
yeah, yeah.
All things considered, I'd rather be wearing clothes. But if I can tell a truly personal story about myself in front of a gay crowd and they get it and they laugh and they cheer and afterwards they come up to me and say, like, I can't believe you told that story, but I'm so glad you did. Like, that to me, it doesn't get better than that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, where can folks go to learn all about the cool things that you're doing and apparently naked things that you're doing?
My website is adamsank.com. That's Sank like the Titanic.
Nice. And you're updating that and you're putting new stuff up there?
I update all my gigs. Like, the second somebody books me, it's up on the website.
Awesome.
I'm very anal retentive that way. And I'm also on Twitter, at Adam Sank. I have a Facebook fan page called Adam Sank Comedian. And that's basically it. Oh, and you can also email me or book me through my website, and I will respond immediately.
Look at that. He's so accessible.
You can reach out and touch me, literally.
Literally. Literally. And
I'm naked.
I was going to say, I'm looking at a page with a big red box, and folks will have to look at the at your fan page to just know exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't think you can talk about my big red box.
And on that note, Adam, my appreciation for people who do what it is that you do and tell these stories and bare your soul and put yourself out there, all in the spirit of getting people to forget their troubles for even a minute and just laugh and embrace what it is that connects us all. I can't tell you how huge that is to everybody who gets to sit in an audience and hear you do what it is that you do.
Well, thank you, and my appreciation to you for having us on and supporting comedy and getting the word out, because it's tough. You know, the one thing I would say to gay men who are listening is give stand-up a chance. You know, you don't have to be in drag to be funny. As often as drag queens are, regular comedians can be funny too. So give us a chance and check us out.
There you go. There you go. Adam Sank, an absolute treat having you on the show. You're going to keep doing what you do?
And you're going to keep doing what you do.
Absolutely.
Happy birthday.
And to you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye. Salvation Army band played, and the children drank lemonade, and the morning lasted all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away. He said in winter 1963, it felt like the world would freeze with John F. Kennedy and the Beatles. All right, folks, and we are back. Jodelia.
Hello, Kennether.
Did you see how on the website it now says Jodelia Clark?
No, I did not.
I haven't changed that yet, but I was thinking about changing that. How does that make you feel?
Well, I don't know, Kennether. How do you feel about that?
I feel that you don't have the password to change my name, so I'm fine with it. So that'd be totally fine with me. How is the Lefse these days?
The season for Lefse has passed.
You know, don't you think that you could find people who it is always the season for Lefse?
Quite possibly. But in the Karstad family, Lefse is a holiday thing.
Okay.
So we don't typically have Lefse any other time of year because it's kind of a pain in the butt to make.
Well, that actually reminds me. Over in Oklahoma City, they're looking to introduce an extreme version of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah!
I wanted to do the most awkward transition we could possibly come up with and have it be punctuated with a symbol. A bill from State Representative Mike Reynolds, that he is spending his time, our buddy Mike Reynolds, to reintroduce Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Wow, what a great use of his time.
Don't you think? I think that people elected him to do that. But anyway, it's been shelved and they don't think it's going to go any farther. But farther, I never get that right.
Ooh, I don't either.
That's not the point. The point is it's not going to go anymore. Further sounded better. Anyway.
Anywhere.
It's not going to go anywhere. But that's what people are spending their time on. That's what they're spending their time on.
That is sad.
So we have a whole marriage segment. And this is a segment where we're going to update people on the marriage things that are going on. And we should probably insert some sort of theme music, but I don't have any. So we're going to insert a whole marriage segment into the show. But it's also an opportunity for us to sit down and really deconstruct your marriage.
Oh, great.
I wasn't going to prepare you for that. So it's good. It kind of works on a number, as they say in the biz, a number of different levels.
Uh-huh.
A number of different levels. So it's great because we'll talk about the news, but more importantly, we're going to really talk about, you know, just your marriage. Okay, so first we got New Jersey. New Jersey, they passed gay marriage, and then Governor Christie vetoed it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think he's a coward.
Okay. Now, I'm fine with you saying he's a coward. Did you see what other people are saying?
I'm sure they're saying worse things.
Well, there's a lot of the articles are talking about his weight. Now, it's funny if it's on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or if it's on, you know, some sort of sardonic, pun-worthy show that's just inserting that in.
Right.
But the news articles, there are some news articles and some news blogs that are also making comments about his weight, and I really respect the different folks who have stepped forward and said, what he did was horrible.
Right.
He vetoed this, and he's a coward.
Right.
But the weight comments have no place in this conversation whatsoever.
I'm appalled that that's even in there.
Yeah.
That That's ridiculous.
And it really also subscribes not just to our, you know, our national ideals of what beauty are, but also the gay community's ideals of what beauty are, and how you can't be overweight and still be a respectable member of the community. So it's really,
I
enormously, enormously respect those folks who are stepping up to say, this was horrible. He should not have vetoed this.
Right.
And you don't put rights for a minority group up for a popular vote,
right,
which is what he wants to do.
Uh-huh.
But the weight comments have absolutely nothing to do with it.
No, they don't.
So that's going on. And then down in Maryland,
The
Maryland Senate panel voted yesterday, 7-4, in favor of a bill that would legalize same-sex marriage, wasting little time in advancing a measure that narrowly cleared the House of Delegates last week. With the vote by the Judicial Proceedings Committee, the full Senate is expected to begin debate on the legislation as early as really this week and send it to Governor Martin O'Malley, who is a Democrat, by the end of the week for his promised signature. So he's already said that he will sign off on this. A similar bill passed the Senate last year, and opponents sounded increasingly resigned Tuesday this week to fighting the measure at the ballot box. Again, it's this idea of we're going to put minority rights up for popular vote. That said, it's looking like just in all of these different states, including New Jersey, it was the first time in New Jersey that they did the poll, and the popular vote said, we support same-sex marriage.
Right.
So even if it does go to a vote, even though I don't think that's the way to decide this issue,
right,
it's still looking okay. So people who support same-sex marriage in Maryland are saying that there's no reason to believe that the Senate, that anybody's changed positions in the Senate from last year, so it should go through the Senate. And the governor, let's get his name again, Governor Martin O'Malley, he will sign this.
That's great.
So that's the news stories. And then that dovetails, really transitions nicely into talking about your marriage. I have a purpose in this.
Okay.
I have a purpose in this. How invested do you feel? So we should say you are legally married.
Yes, in the state of Vermont.
You are legally married in the state of Vermont.
Yes.
We talked about this somewhat briefly about your views on marriage elsewhere.
Yeah.
My question is, I am not you. I am not.
That is correct.
That is correct. And that's why we cover this.
Yes.
I am not legally married in the state of Vermont. I do not have a marriage.
Correct.
Were I you,
uh-huh,
I'm curious how I would feel, how invested I would feel in marriage in other states, given that you're done.
Except I'm not.
This is why I ask.
Right. I'm not done, because if I got some fabulous job offer, or if my wife did in a state that didn't have it.
Did you just give your notice?
No.
Okay, this is a weird way of doing that.
No.
Okay.
This is not that at all. But let's just say, here, we'll put it with my wife then. Let's say that she got some fabulous job offer that was the job of her dreams in, let's say Minnesota, actually, since it's where she's from.
Okay.
And I mean, she's got family there. We like being there. It's a nice state. However, they do not have marriage equality going on there. So our marriage would not count.
Okay.
And I wouldn't want to live there.
I am certainly not saying that you are not invested, just as I am not invested in federal marriage equality, because we are, and there
Very
are any number
so.
Of rights. But I'm kind of curious, because, and this goes back to the whole Vermont thing, do people in Vermont do everything that they can do to support other states' marriage equality, given that we've achieved it, or is there some element of complacency with Vermont couples to say, we got it, you know, and we had that fight, and it was a fight here.
It was a fight here, and
I am not in any way minimizing, the fight and the energy that people put in there. So if you're going to send me an angry email about how I'm minimizing it, I'm not. Send the email to jody@thisshowissogay.com. So I'm not saying that. But I am saying, I kind of feel like, yet again, there are many Vermonters that are not doing everything they can to help other states, given that, even more so, given that we have gay marriage here. We are our own little world.
On the flip side of that.
Hit me. Don't hit me.
I won't hit you, since
Thank
I
you.
Do in
she's,
fact.
She's wielding a stick, folks.
I have a drumstick in my hand for sound effects.
Thank you.
On the other hand, if a lot of out-of-staters start going into, say, Minnesota and demanding marriage equality they're going to see that as potentially, opponents are going to see that as, oh, this gay agenda, it's all these people from out of state, it's not our state, well, that's not our values, that's some other state's values. We don't want that here.
Right.
So it could, in fact, work against a particular state if there's too much of a bunch of out-of-state folks. Also, depending on who they are, like, oh, those liberal New Yorkers or those liberal Easterners, they don't understand us here, wherever we are, in Texas, in Tennessee, and wherever the next fight is. So it's really kind of precarious for an out-of-state group to start coming in, helping out. They need to be careful because it's such a touchy issue.
But I would say that the only argument that I would have against that is, and I totally respect if you're going to go someplace else, that of course you want that state to have marriage equality. The thing is though, and where I think it adds to my sense that there's some degree of complacency here in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
is that Vermont married couples skew older. The Vermont, I actually just learned this yesterday, that Vermont married couples, they do skew a little bit older. Vermont population, actually, particularly where we are here in Windham County in southern Vermont,
mm-hmm.
the median age for just people who live in Windham County
uh-huh.
is skewed crazy older than just other parts of the country, even the rest of Vermont, and certainly other states in the surrounding area in New England. So then by definition, Vermont couples are older
because right.
you figure you're going to be on the average older when you
right.
get married.
Right.
And so I think there is some degree to which Vermont same-sex married couples are less likely to go move someplace else because
mm-hmm.
odds are more that they're more established
yes.
in their career. So I think that's another piece that's, now you're younger. You are a younger, married couple.
Yeah.
You guys are you're in your late 20s. And so, I mean, you've been married. God, whose sweet 16 was it that you met at? It was hers.
Sure.
It was her. Oh, look at that. That was cute. So anyway, that was the segment where we talk about your marriage.
Right. Right.
That wasn't so bad.
No, it wasn't. I do want to add that the better scenario
mm-hmm.
is that we just get federal, period.
Oh my gosh.
End of story. Because,
and we're all invested in that.
Yeah. And that's still a huge, that's everyone's fight. That is everyone's fight.
Yeah.
And I think that the more states that end up having the fight, that momentum will build for the federal fight to be a little easier
yes.
and a little less impossible.
And we would like that to be a little bit easier.
We really would.
We would. Now, over in Virginia, the Senate voted 22-18 to pass a bill. This is fun. I love it here. I love it here as a gay. A bill that would allow private adoption agencies to deny placing children with prospective parents who are gay. Let's pause.
Sure.
And then let's go into the fact that the Senate voted 22-18 to pass this bill, and they are sending it to Republican Governor Bob McDonnell, who says he will sign it. Virginia will become just the second state with such a law. It's like moving backwards.
It totally is.
It's moving backwards. The second state with such a law, which proponents, I don't know which the other, North Dakota. Good job, Virginia. You're with North Dakota. And I also would like to say that we enjoy all of our North Dakotan listeners. I know you're right there next to Minnesota. Is that true?
It's
okay. So we enjoy our North Dakotan listeners, particularly those in Fargo. Is that North Dakota?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, it is.
And if Fargo is indeed in South Dakota and you are offended, send me an email. Send it to jody@thisshowisogay.com. So proponents say the bill was not modeled after North Dakota's statute. The legislation allows agencies to deny these placements that conflict with their moral or religious beliefs, including opposition to same-sex parents. The legislation is based on regulations adopted by the Virginia Board of Social Services back in December. The legislator's Democratic minority vehemently opposed the legislation, mm-hmm. saying the intent is clearly to make it tougher for LGBT Virginians to form families. And this is a quote from Senator Adam Eben. He said, quote, "It's the first step towards actually outlawing adoption by LGBT people." Senator Mark Herring, He said agency's moral or religious beliefs should not take precedence over the best interests of the child. Imagine that.
Hey.
But Republican Senator Frank Wagner of Virginia Beach, Virginia, briefly explained the bill on the Senate floor. He said, quote, this important legislation does not in any way change current Virginia law regarding who can adopt in Virginia. It simply confirms that faith-based agencies will not be discriminated against. They will not be discriminated against by the state simply for acting according to their faith principles.
Oh, my gosh.
He is from, that is Senator Frank Wagner from Virginia Beach, Virginia, home of my buddy, Diana Dayritt. Do you know Diana Dayritt?
I don't.
First person I met at NYU.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I still talk to her.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's good.
Just want to put that out there. All right. So the American Civil Liberties Union, their quote was, quote, this is truly troubling legislation that in essence codifies state-supported discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, which is not only unconstitutional, but also unconscionable. I don't use that word nearly enough on this show. There's so much that's unconscionable.
It's true.
As it will deny many parentless children the family placements they so desperately need. So that's from the ACLU.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Progress. Progress.
Yeah.
You know the worst part? That was the last story that I had for this week's
show. Oh, no.
I had a note to end it. You have, did you read about, they have that guy who's the sheriff who... He was posting the pictures of himself, and he works for the Romney campaign, and then he got outed, and he was really anti-immigration, but then they're saying that he threatened his gay lover with deportation. It's such a mess. But I hate that, of course, the focus of the story is not on the deportation piece, which is problematic, but is on the fact it's got his picture, this shirtless, actually very much in underwear picture of him. And he resigned from the Romney campaign. And you're kind of questioning, did he resign from the Romney campaign because of the gay part or the deportation part? I think it was kind of because of the gay part, which, I don't like that. So there, that's a happier story to end on.
Yes.
Although Santorum, the leader, he's not happy with the media. He does not appreciate the media. He feels that the media asks him more questions about LGBT rights and equality than any of the other candidates. And he's tired of being painted as the guy who is against all these rights, even though he is indeed
against all these rights. So...
He just feels that he gets those questions more than anyone else. So let me say, since our last show 2 weeks ago, he cleaned up those three states in Minnesota. I don't remember the other ones, but Minnesota and the other ones.
Yeah.
And now he's surging and he's on top. If indeed he secures the Republican nomination for the President of the United States, this will become, this is all we're going to talk about until November.
Yeah.
Because his comments about LGBT equality, I would say they're unconscionable.
I would say they are, pretty much all of them.
Yes. Yeah. I feel a duck should drop from the ceiling when you say the word unconscionable.
Why a duck?
Oh my gosh.
What?
Do you not know that reference?
No, I don't.
Did you at least watch RuPaul's Drag Race this week?
No, I did not.
How do you wake up in the morning?
Because I am fulfilled by watching episodes of Downton Abbey instead.
Madame LaQueer was kicked off. Spoiler. But yes, I don't understand. I think it's more you don't know how fulfilling your life could be. And so that's why I'm able to stomach sitting next to you knowing that you haven't watched it. But know that I'm uncomfortable.
Is it uncomfortable? Is it, but not unconscionable that I have not watched it?
I wouldn't say that on the air.
Uh-huh.
I will put it on the This Show Is So Gay Facebook page, though, and it'll probably be in the description of this week's show, but I would never say that on the air.
I see.
And if you wanted to read that, you could just go to Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, and then click like, because if you like us, we sure as heck like you. So that's Facebook and why you should like us. You should, of course, drop us an email if you are angry about anything that we said on this week's show. Just send an email on over to Jodi, that's J-O-D-I, at thisshowisogay.com. If you want to just write in with guest suggestions or how much you love the show, send that on over to Ken at thisshowisogay.com. And, of course, stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn about all the fun things happening with the show. Amazing guests coming up on the show. Dr. Frankie Bashan is coming back to the show. She feels that I need more relationship advice, so she's going to come back to the show, and we're going to talk about that. We have Avi Scher, who is this incredible, incredible incredible ballet choreographer who is world-renowned, opening these shows in New York City. And I've known him since he was 17 years old when I used to work for the School of American Ballet. So it's just, that will be such a treat to have him on the show to go full circle around. And of course, our sincerest thanks to Adam Sank. How funny was Adam Sank?
Very.
He was very funny and great song selections. Great song selections. Adam, we love what you're doing. Keep making people laugh. That's it for us on this week's show. Get out there, folks. Go do some incredible, incredible things. Go use your voice.
Yeah.
It's important.
It is important.
It's important. And remember, while you're doing all of those things, why be gay when you can be so gay?
And like this has a call, it's hard to hear, yeah. And I wrap my fear around it like a blanket. I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. And I'm crawling on your shore. I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the thousands. I woke up with a headache, like my head against the wall.